afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today, Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It's Monday, April 29th, 2019. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, happy Monday, Melody.
Happy Monday to you, too. And the markets didn't like Monday. Gold and silver didn't like Monday, but we do, because it's a great buying opportunity if you're buying gold and silver. So let's go ahead and get to the market prices today. Gold, you know, I was down big, 1277, came back a couple bucks, and it was at $7 all day long. It's like it didn't move. So we have pressure in gold, down $7 at 1279. Silver's the same way. It's like they stopped trading the markets. Oh, I know why. The politicians are back in Washington. That's what it's all about. You have silver down 24 cents today at $14.96. Again, it was whacked. And they held it. It's like they didn't move. Platinum down 10 bucks at 892. And this is the killer of the day. Palladium down $93, almost 6.5% at 1376. So that's what they do, guys. The big paper buyers, they get all the little guys in there thinking that they're buying palladium on the dip, and then they sell it at the top, and then you get all these little guys holding the bag. But, you know, no one ever learns, and, you know, you'll see a little bit of fluctuations and so forth, and even rhodium was only down 25 bucks, but, yeah, that was a major, major day, and palladium down 93, 6.5%. USDX today was only down 0.02 at 97.99. Crude oil was down 19 cents at 63.11, excuse me, and the paper markets today, you have the Dow up 10 points, 26,554. The NASDAQ up 15, 8161. S&P 2,943 up 3. And it seemed like this morning the big news was Anadarko was entering merger talks with Occidental and putting the Chevron deal in jeopardy. It seems like that's what all everyone was talking about. Nothing else. Nothing else is important. 10-year yield, 2.54%. That was up 0.03. Let's see. Let's take a peek at the gold June contract. That was actually 1282, so it was a little better than the New York spot price after market trading. So June contract, 1282. We'll take it, although the silver May contract was less, so maybe that's why we're seeing that big hit. Maybe we'll see a reversal on the silver tomorrow. And, you know, it's, I suppose if we wanted to talk all day long about impeachment and we wanted to talk all day long about this and this, there'd be a lot of news to cover. But there really isn't much real news, true news, to cover. There's a lot of propaganda, there's a lot of hype, there's a lot of noise. We don't cover that. Sometimes we do, but so it's very little financial news. I know Boeing, you know, was talking about their issue on their MAX planes, Dave. And, you know, it really is amazing that, hey, you know, something that of such importance as a warning signal to let you know that your plane is going into a free dive doesn't work. You know?
It's pretty irresponsible, if you ask me.
That's like saying, you know, I don't know, something on your automobile, your brakes don't work, and, you know, nothing comes on to tell you about your brakes or something. I don't know. But anyway, so they were on the news a lot today. I don't think there was much of any other financial news. Of course, the Fed is meeting this week. We have a little bit to talk about that. There are two things about the Fed. The Fed's preferred inflation gauge showed no change in March and remained well below the central bank's target. This is a government report that came out today. Consumer spending did surge amid a jump in expenditures on motor vehicles and health care. Motor vehicles, health care, you know, that's, you don't want a large spending in health care. That's not a good sign. But anyway, the core personal consumption expenditures index strips out the volatile food and energy prices. It was flat and up 1.6% year over year. And the PCE deflator is the Fed's key inflation metric. And the central bank considers, of course, the 2% that we talk about is supposed to be a healthy level. That's their la-la land percentage. But they have said that they expect to hold interest rates pretty steady for the rest of the year. And in fact, I even heard, Dave, possible cuts come the third or fourth quarter. That they're thinking that that's what the Fed's going to be doing, is actually making some cuts.
Well, yeah, I mean, that could be. I think it's way premature to be speculating about that, not knowing, you know, what's going to happen, you know, between now and then. But, you know, certainly, you know, Kudlow and others in the administration and on Wall Street are calling for this 25 to 50 basis point cut. You know, as we know, tomorrow and Wednesday, the Federal Open Market Committee holds its monthly meeting. Markets do expect no change in rates, though Jerome Powell's news conference afterward could provide some clues on monetary policy. It'd be interesting to see if he talks about this new program they're considering. It's not that you'll talk about in a moment. It's unclear whether, you know, it's on the Fed's agenda. Now, you know, in the most recent economic projections, the Fed said they expect core inflation to hit 2% for the full year in 2019 and for headline PCE to hit 1.8%. And again, you know, while the price index fell, consumer spending surged to its highest level in 9.5 years last month, rising about 0.9% overall and 0.7% when adjusted for inflation.
We were talking about this new program that the Fed is looking at, that it's being discussed as another version of quantitative easing. Now, this just came out an hour ago, so we haven't had a chance much to digest it. But just to share it with the listeners, Dave, they're considering a new program that would allow banks to exchange treasuries for reserves. Now, this is a move aimed at ensuring liquidity during difficult times. That also would help the central bank decrease the size of their nearly $4 trillion balance sheet. So it's like, yeah, they're getting ready for it, Dave. That's what it sounds like to me. And the so-called standing repo facility is in its early discussion phases. Now, you have the St. Louis Fed economist David Andolfato and Jan Ehrig have authored two papers on this plan, and they said that it would ease the regulatory burden for banks. Yes, let's ease that regulatory burden for banks who feel pressure into holding ultra-safe assets. So in some quarters, this idea is viewed as a natural extension of the current Fed policy, although there's others that think it's in its essence could be a repackaged form. Okay, you hear that, ladies and gentlemen? A repackaged form of quantitative easing, and thus yet another reiteration of the Fed's decade-long tinkering in the banking markets. So the central bank, this idea is coming from central bank policymakers as they're looking at a way to cut their bond holdings on its balance sheet without being disruptive to the markets. They're not going to do that. There isn't anything they could do, Dave, to eliminate or to cut the bond holdings without being disruptive to the markets. I mean, they're pretty much between a rock and a hard place. And again, to me, it's like they know what's coming and they're preparing. They're looking for ways out to protect them. And
yeah, but I'll tell you what's interesting about this, I mean, how it was, how news of this potential move was, you know, released, if it was leaked or if it was part of, you know, this St. Louis Fed economist report. But from just this one article we're seeing, it seems as though it comes as a big surprise in the financial markets. And I'm not sure that that's actually the case, but you know, one thing we know for sure is that the paper markets in particular, if not certainty, they like predictability. They don't like surprises. And this appears to be a big surprise, and not everyone's happy about it. I mean, we know this one fellow, head of Whalen Global Advisors, Christopher Whalen. I mean, he said this is a bad idea for the markets. You know, he says we need to know if the markets can function on their own. Every time they, meaning the Fed, try to fine-tune this thing, they get it wrong. So now Whalen's saying the Fed faces an intensifying danger of becoming a perpetual liquidity provider rather than just the lender of last resort that had traditionally been its function prior to the financial crisis. So that's an interesting early response to this program, Melody. So it does behoove us to pay closer attention, especially to what's coming out of the Open Market Committee meeting, which we'll hear more about on Wednesday afternoon.
Yeah, and you know, and it's, again, they're repackaging derivatives, ladies and gentlemen. It's the same old game. It's the same old ball game. And really, it is all about the bankers and the central bankers. I don't think they really care about Wall Street, what the markets are going to be doing. They're looking at the bottom line. And what's the best way to protect their dollars, their interest, and it's certainly not yours or mine. So you know where I'm heading, ladies and gentlemen. 800-375-4188. It's 800-375-4188. Same game, different day. And the only ones who loses are the taxpayers of this country. And let's see what else. You know, you get a decent, you know, everything is so fickle. And even in these markets, you know, it's you get a good GDP reading. And we know they've got, how many do they give now? Three revisements for the GDP until they actually log in the final number. And, you know, so you get a couple of good consumption. You got good consumer purchasing. You get a good number out of that. Now, all of a sudden, any surveys you have a survey of corporate economists predict the economies will expand over the next year just because of that. I mean, you know, in December, oh my gosh, the world was coming to an end because we haven't seen, you know, the markets drop to the degree that it had since the Great Depression. Not the Great Recession, the Great Depression. Now, but they also believe that, so they're looking for the economy will expand over the next year, but these economists also believe the pace of growth will decline and employers are facing pressure to raise wages. And they're going to spend more on worker training and automate tasks because of the low unemployment rate. 53% of the economists that was polled for the National Association for Business Economics April survey, and it was released today, expect the economy to grow by more than 2% this year, down from 67% who felt that way in January. So I guess they are leading a little bit, and it's going to expand, but just at a slower pace, I guess is what they're saying, Dave.
That's my take from that as well. I mean, we know that businesses increased imports at the end of last year out of concern that the U.S. could further escalate tariffs against China and later others. But so far, the White House has held off to conduct trade talks, which, and we'll get to this in a minute, that appear to be headed toward or in the final stage of negotiation, again, with China. The survey that Melody mentioned found that the tariffs already imposed by the U.S. have been a drag. For economists involved in goods producing, 75% of them said the import taxes were a negative. Still, profit margins were rising in about a third of the corporate economists' firms. That's up from just under a quarter of them previously. And more than half, 52%, say there is a shortage of skilled labor. And that's usually a sign of possible upward wage pressures. So once again, you know, mixed signals, some good news and some not so good news, and some outright, you know, alarming news, if not actually bad.
Remember last week we talked about the meeting with the White House and Pelosi and Schumer about infrastructure, and we couldn't find a whole lot of news on it and so forth. Was that with you, or was I with Butch that day?
No, I think we talked about it. I guess it's because it's this Tuesday and not last Tuesday.
It's Tuesday. Hey, we're ahead of the ball here, ladies and gentlemen. We're just getting you all ramped up so we can say, yes, it is this Tuesday.
Sign of enthusiasm.
Absolutely. So we'll report on this on Wednesday, ladies and gentlemen. And there's a group that has provided a resolution to be introduced in a joint effort of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, the moderate Blue Dogs, and the newly elected Democrats. So they have this plan so that when House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and the Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer go to the White House, they will have this. And the meeting with the president is intended to determine whether there's common ground on what traditionally has been a bipartisan issue. And the resolution calls for significant federal investment in the infrastructure, stating that most of the funding should come from the government rather than private entities. And I think, wasn't it Trump who would rather have private investment?
Well, he wanted to leverage the federal government's more modest investment to attract a total of $1 trillion, presumably from, you know, from private sector sources. So this Democratic proposal, you know, hasn't put a price tag on their program just yet, although, you know, we're reading that, as you mentioned, that they're looking for it to be funded primarily by the federal government, which is, you know, usually how it's been done in the past. Of course, our debt levels were slightly to significantly lower than they are today. Typically, you know, a lot of federal programs, you know, find, you know, minimum of 80% federal funding, 10 to 15% state, and 5% you know, city or local matches. So it'll be interesting to see how, you know, what may come out of this meeting tomorrow, if anything. Pelosi had mentioned, you know, at least $1 trillion in infrastructure spending, but said she would prefer, you know, as much as $2 trillion, which is apparently is a figure that was being touted by the American Society of Civil Engineers.
Yeah, it just cracks me up. They're in there asking for $2 trillion, and yet our debt ceiling... they're taking emergency measures just to fund the government today, and they have the cojones to go in there and ask for $2 trillion, all funded for infrastructure by the government. I mean, it's just insanity.
Peanuts. Peanuts, just Melody. Insanity. Peanuts.
800-375-4188. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom, and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Gentlemen, you're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And we're going to move right along. We're talking about, just the trillions of dollars for infrastructure building. And Dave and I were talking during the break about, they're just setting President Trump up because they're asking for this money, knowing that he's going to want money for his wall. So we're not quite sure where this is going to head, but it does take a lot to go in there and ask him for these trillions of dollars. Or is it just, everybody knows already what to expect? And is the economy so bad that they need this infrastructure in order for him to have the, to have a good election for 2020? But, why are they setting it up, though, Dave? I don't know.
I don't know. If I'm the administration, I would try and delay this, I think, until next year, because the numbers show, and I don't know that the numbers will show, even if it is a reality that there's a recession at some point later this year or early next. I think that would, if in terms of classical economics, that would be the best time for any infrastructure plan, whether it's a trillion or 2 trillion or however in God's name they're going to pay for this to come up, because that's when they're going to need this kind of stimulus. But I just don't know if anyone looks that far enough past, past their nose toward anything.
Speaking about past their noses, what about the final stages for the U.S.-China trade talks?
Oh, gosh. I know we've talked about this ad nauseum since the beginning of the year, that, it's already past the cry wolf phase. But, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin did say this morning that trade talks between the U.S. and China are now in the final stages. In fact, he may have said the final stage. His claim comes ahead of this week's meeting in Beijing between negotiators from both sides. We're getting into the final laps. That was the quote that he gave at this global conference in Los Angeles. He said, I think both sides have a desire to reach an agreement, and we've made a lot of progress. Now, these talks in China, I believe, are scheduled for tomorrow. According to the report, Mnuchin said that while both countries are nearing a deal, the negotiations are reaching a stage where an agreement could happen, or, listen carefully to this, it could end without a deal. Really?
Well, no kidding. Well, we do have Mnuchin and Lighthizer. They are going to Beijing for talks that are starting tomorrow. And, they're going to meet with the Chinese Vice Premier, Liu He. Mnuchin apparently didn't want to say if the talks would conclude by the end of June, but only that both economic powerhouses desire to have an agreement. No kidding. But anyway, but you know, something he also declined to say is if a collapse in negotiation would cause Trump's to pose more tariffs on China beyond those already imposed on the $250 billion of Chinese goods.
Well, we do know that that would all also cause a collapse in that big celebration planned at Mar-a-Lago. And I know that's got to be that would be weighing heavily on President Xi, who loves a good party. Reportedly.
Well, you know, we talk about the youth often, the millennials and the different generation. What is it, X? And now we have the Gen Z, and they keep sort of confounding corporate America. The biggest surprise about this new cohort of teenagers is the most unexpected of all. They like going to the mall, maybe just like we did when we
How
were kids.
About it.
Yeah, we had some place to go. 95% of them visited a physical shopping center in a 3-month period of last year, as opposed to just 75% of millennials and 58% of Gen Xers. Now, this was an International Council of Shopping Centers study. Who knew there was even an International Council of Shopping Centers? And they generally like it. 3/4 of them said going to a brick and mortar store was a better experience than online. And for those of you, the Gen X or the Gen Z, or the group of kids, teens, and young adults are roughly between the ages of 7 and 22. And several retailers who didn't understand the fundamental differences on how they shop landed themselves in bankruptcy court. And, of course, we're thinking of Charlotte Russe, Wet Seal, and Claire. And so, again, these stores failed to adapt to changing trends and stay relevant. We all know can and will crush a business. Here's a look at some of the ways retailers are keeping up. They don't fight the iPhone. Gen Z spends a lot of time on their smartphones, and they know it. They let them customize it. Nearly half of Gen Z shoppers want products tailor-made to their tastes and interests. They don't think secondhand clothing is second rate.
Hear, hear.
Yes. Gen Z just coming into its spending power is looking for a good deal. And also that group is turning to reuse clothing at the quickest pace. And this is according to ThredUp's 2019 resale report, with 1 in 3 Gen Z shoppers expected to buy secondhand this year.
We went shopping, my wife and I, this weekend with our 22-year-old who bought nothing but secondhand clothing.
Well,
very impressed.
Well, good for her.
Now, and when she turns into a millennial next year, all bets are off. But you know, we're savoring it for now, Melody.
Well, here's another interesting little report. More Americans are taking less vacation time. 13% who are currently employed say they plan to take 1/4 of their vacation days or fewer this year. And that's according to a recent poll of nearly 2,600 U.S. adults, and it was conducted by Bankrate. And they also found that 4% of Americans aren't planning to take any vacation time at all. That's too much time to be leaving on the table. Ted Rossman said he's a credit card analyst for Bankrate. The average American only took about 54% of their available time off in the previous 12 months. For many American workers, vacation time is paid time off, so if you don't use it, you may lose it on more than just a day away from the office.
Yeah, you know, in total, they're saying Americans gave up 212 million days off in 2017. That amounts to $62 billion plus in, quote, lost benefits. And even if they get out of the office, many Americans don't fully leave work behind. Glassdoor found that roughly 30% of employees who took time off say a coworker contacted them about a job-related matter while they were on vacation. Technology has enabled us to be on and available to work 24/7. This one analyst says, and you're only one finger swipe away from your email inbox while you're sitting on the beach, whether it be in Hawaii or Ocean City, Maryland.
Well, you know, if I was on the beach in Hawaii, the last thing I would even have in my pocket would be and wanting to look at my emails. I'm sorry.
Cell phone.
No.
Be darned.
No, I wouldn't. But you know what? I saw a report this morning. They were talking about cell phones and the amount of stress that cell phones are creating. Because people are constantly viewing and they're stressing out because of their emails, always searching, always looking, always they're needing that additional reinforcement, I guess, of something. They need to be stimulated, but it's creating stress and it's creating a lot of problems. I mean, this isn't new. I mean, we've heard about this off and on for how many years? Well, you know, since, you know, everybody and their brother has a cell phone in their hands that's connected to the cell phone. And the report that I was watching, they said they actually purchased flip phones to get away from the cell phone, to get away from the smartphones.
Smart move. I remember Jones in it back in the, when was it, the 90s. You know, first, you know, my peers and I had to have, I guess we really called it a car phone back then before it was actually cellular. I mean, it was hardwired into your, and attached to your car's battery. It had a, you know, a cord attached to the receiver and, you know, and then, you know, one of your peers showed up, but he said, "Hey, look at this gadget." And it was a Motorola flip phone. It was like, "Wow, I gotta have that." And then, you know, the second or third generations enabled you to take pictures. And we do like keeping up with the Joneses. And unfortunately, the manufacturers have trained us far too well, I'm afraid.
Truly. And of course, you know, people do need that constant stimulation that they need, whatever they get from their cell phones. But it is creating mental health. The people that said they went to, that they gave up their smartphones for the flip phones, so they actually have more time. They're more productive. You know, your iPhone is wastes just as much time as your computer. You know, 1 minute it's, I'm only going to spend 20 minutes on the computer. And next thing you know, 3 hours have gone by. So they do steal time, and you're not as productive as you could be. But also, there's this survey says taking a real break is an important habit. Research shows time off may be good for your health and even boost your productivity at work. I'm going on vacation, Dave, tomorrow, so take over. There's creative, innovative, collaborative benefits when you can actually unplug and rest your mind. This is what we were just talking about.
Now, wait a second. You're going on vacation tomorrow?
Yes. But so we do need time to recharge, ladies and gentlemen, even if it is for a short vacation. And so, you know, take a break. I know how important many of us, particularly listening to talk radio and so forth, you need a break sometimes. And when you come back to it, you come back with a fresher mind. It does help you to think a little bit. But, you know, you know, people who overwork, I mean, you have that sleep deprivation. It's linked to many medical conditions and even including diabetes. So again, it's always good to recharge your batteries, ladies and gentlemen. And we're going to be heading into a break about 5 minutes. Maybe we can get this one in, Dave. It was our newsletter article about money disorder.
Yeah, so, you know... Speaking of stress, Melody, you know, the self-described pit bull of personal development and best-selling author Larry Winget is once quoted as saying, "People don't have money problems, they have priority problems." Well, it turns out that this self-help guru is correct in one sense. Some people do have priority problems, especially when it comes to money. However, some people actually do have money problems per se. Will come as no surprise to, you know, listeners then that, you know, in survey after survey, the issue married couples name is one of the top three reasons they fight is M-O-N-E-Y. Most often, they list money as the number one cause. And according to a study by Northwestern Mutual, money is the numero uno overall source of stress for 44% of American adults. That's outpacing personal relationships and work. More than a quarter of those surveyed said that financial anxiety made them feel depressed at least once a month. Big bummer, Melody.
Well, you wrote that for some people, the stress, anxiety, and depression isn't just a normal side effect of money troubles. It's the result of a full-on disorder.
Well, yeah, that's what I found very interesting. Brad Klontz believes that. He's a psychologist and a associate professor at Creighton University and a certified financial planner who specializes in researching and defining money disorders. He defines a money disorder as a chronic pattern of self-defeating or self-destructive financial behaviors that goes beyond simply being bad with money. Now, according to Klontz, if your destructive behavior leads to significant consequences in your life, you know, impairing your health, relationships, work, or more and more, you've got a disorder, a money disorder, and that's a problem that can be treated by medical professionals. Lifestyle writer Casey Bond reports that when it comes to money disorders, there are formal diagnoses that can be found within the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. That's the standard classification used by mental health professionals in the U.S., and there are more informal diagnoses. More on that in the article itself, which you can read at dgscoins.com.
So what's behind the bad spending behavior? I mean, there's some of us that, not us, but there's people that let their spending habit get out of control, even when they know better or should know better.
Well, are you tempted to say only members of Congress know for sure?
Yes.
Well,
yes, I am.
Bond points to five psychological principles that are behind bad individual spending decisions. We won't go into them in detail, but they're delayed reward discounting related to, you know, having better impulse control. There's the scarcity principle. It's an economic thing that when applies to psychology, you know, basically states the less available something is, the more, you know, desired it becomes.
That's true.
There's the sunk cost fallacy. You know, as we make poor spending decisions based on money, time, or efforts spent in the past. And anchoring, that's when you're shopping for an item that normally costs $100. However, the item's on sale for $50. It's like you'll focus on the initial price of $100, that's the anchor, and therefore consider the new price of $50 a great deal, even if it isn't. And last, social facilitation, which is when the presence of other people pushes you to achieve better results. They use, you know, how you act at an auction and, you know, up the price of something that you probably never even thought of, much less needed or wanted. You know, it's the idea that others are all vying for the same item creates psychological arousal and makes rational decision-making a whole lot harder. Take a look at the article. There's some interesting insights.
I do have one question for when we come back, and ladies and gentlemen, please stay tuned. And you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at dgscoins.com. That's dgscoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Heading into the break, we were talking about our article in the Financial Survival newsletter, and we were talking about the money disorders. And there were five psychological principles that Dave was talking about that are behind bad individual spending decisions. And I asked him, or I wanted to ask the question, is that these same disorders could they actually be used by your seasoned salesperson, your negotiators? These same principles, could they be used knowing the makeup of a buyer? They look for these various principles in order to, define who they're talking to.
I think it's an outstanding question, and I don't know the answer to it, but I suspect. Logic and to some extent my experience tells me that the answer to that is yes, that at certain levels, you know, the top-notch salespeople, especially when it comes to a big ticket price, a huge union contract, and so on, that to know these underlying principles and to be able to, see a certain type of quality or disorder, if you will, in either who you're trying to sell something to or negotiating with, I think could be a real big advantage. And in the past, I don't know to what extent they're used today. I suspect they're still used. I mean, industrial psychologists were big consultants back in the day, with the sales teams of IBM and the AFL-CIOs of the world, as a means of manipulating or at least better understanding, you know, your competitor, your opponent. Who's across the table from you? I think it's an excellent question. It'd be interesting to talk with, whether it's a C-level person at a big corporation, if those tactics are used today.
Hmm. Well, certainly would define your person that you're. Would you like to share the listeners with any more about that, Dave? It is an interesting article, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, I'll tell you, the one area that I think begs some follow up is what a person can do if they think they have a money disorder, or if a loved one. Or a good friend or a coworker has this kind of or any kind of money disorder. And, you know, there are several options out there. I mean, seeking professional help, similar to any other mental illness, still is a stigma. I mean, we've come a long, long way in that area. But I suspect in terms of money, it may have been less and still is less talked about. But, you know, you can also go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I didn't mean to interrupt. I just wanted to add in there. You're right, because it's difficult because there's shame attached to it.
Oh, yeah. How about it?
And a failure. And I mean, I don't know. And I think those are some of the hardest things to, you know, make an announcement to your family or whatever. I mean, there's just, you're right, the stigma. And you're right, there has been major roadways. I can remember my grandparents, and I'm, you know, your grandparents, and oh my gosh, if they didn't spend what they didn't have, but this is what we've evolved from with credit cards. You know, that reward system that you mentioned, an early reward, you know, the buy now, pay later. You know, you reward yourself for, and, you know, it is really kind of fascinating. And what's also fascinating is those that can stay away from going down that path and those that can't, what really separates the two.
Yeah. Well, seek professional help, ladies and gentlemen, whether it's your medical doctor or psychologist.
Did I lose
you? I am. I'm here.
Oh, maybe I lost Dave. Maybe he didn't like my analysis of. So I guess Todd will see if he can't get him back. But anyway, there is one way to spend your money wisely, ladies and gentlemen. And of course, that is to invest in the safe haven of precious metals. Sock it away. It's a great savings account, very private. And give us a call at 800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. All right. The IMF says slowing growth. And if Dave hears me, just hang up. And slowing global growth and elevated tensions in trade and geopoliticals are posing economic challenges for countries in the Middle East. Now, this is a report from the IMF. The International Monetary Fund is latest report. Global developments, they're affecting the outlook for this year, namely the slowdown in growth, especially on trade. We have that volatility in the oil price. And, of course, we have the global financing conditions. This is according to the IMF's director of the Middle East and Central Asia. This report also highlighted how volatile oil prices are negatively affecting some countries. And, of course, you have the others that, of course, are grappling with rising public debt. For all importing countries where debt is high, it's very important to tackle it and to reduce the level of deficit. It's kind of like what we were talking about, our own money problems. And that will allow us, or that will allow those countries to reduce their debt burden relative to GDP. So therefore, it's very important for countries to pursue and to accelerate their diversification strategies and at the same time maintain the pace of fiscal adjustment that will allow them to reduce their dependence on oil revenues. And I don't know if if Todd can try to get a hold of Dave to see if he can bring him in here.
Can you hear me?
But so it's during the past 18 months, the IMF's reported social unrest index has hit multi-year highs in some countries in the Middle East region. The index calculates the share of articles in major news sources that include key terms relating to protests, demonstrations, and other forms of social unrest. Well, you know, we mentioned a little earlier in the program about China's Belt and Road Initiative, and that is expanding beyond infrastructure. And Chinese President Xi Jinping's signature Belt and Road Initiative is now about far more than just their infrastructure. And if you remember, ladies and gentlemen, this program began about 6 years ago. and it focused on building out rail and maritime trade routes connecting China and Central Asia, Europe, and Africa. Now, the second Belt and Road Forum, and that wrapped up last weekend in Beijing, demonstrated that the China-led program now seeks to influence technology and governance around the world. There's going to be a shift away from the hard infrastructure projects. Now, this was from Tom Rafferty, principal economist for China at the Economist Intelligence Unit, said the initiative is going to have a broader range. In fact, Rafferty said, the Chinese leader demonstrated that he sees the program as a China global governance initiative. Well, that's kind of interesting because now they're looking to influence the technology and governance around the world. And it kind of makes me think about our trade talks with China. And the biggest one is the stealing of technology and so forth. Xi's speech at the forum's opening ceremony on Friday proclaimed that China's initiative would strengthen cooperation in customs, taxation, and audit oversight, and actually pursue cooperation on technological development. And although it's been too difficult to pin down the exact nature of the Belt and Road Initiative, the latest pronouncements do indicate how Beijing, as many had expected, using the program as a way to expand its global influence. And he also added he now expects China to be more strategic about where and what project it takes on, with the goal being that long elusive goal of connecting the Eurasian landmass. So this I also think is sort of important is the United Arab Emirates and China signed a $3.4 billion worth of new deals on the weekend as part of China's Belt and Road Initiative.
Melody, can you hear me?
That's expected to boost an existing $53 billion worth of bilateral trade to $70 billion next year. China is already the UAE's second largest trading partner, and the UAE serves as a major gateway for China's exports to the Middle East. So as part of the new deals, the two countries launched a number of new investments, including the development of the 60 million square feet station at the new Silk Road in Dubai at Expo 2020. And I'll tell you what, I saw a brief article on Dubai's airports, and I mean, it's really incredible. And then I think of our airports back here in the States. I mean, when you look at Dubai's airports, it does remind me of the Jetsons and the high technology of the future. And I don't know if it's beautiful. It's, you know, it, to me, it's ugly. It's beauty. I mean, there's beauty in everything, and it's weird. It's strange architecture, but compared to ours, at least they're doing something about it. Let's see what else we can talk. We only have a couple more minutes left, and I don't think we have Dave back yet.
Hello?
No, can't hear Dave, so I'm not sure what happened to him. It was funny going into the break. I said, yeah, we're having a really good show today. He says, yeah, we are. And I says, well, let's wait for this last quarter. So, you know, maybe I ought to go buy a, you know, lottery ticket and say maybe I'm going to win the billion-dollar lottery or something. I don't know, ladies and gents. I'm just so we'll see what happens to him, see if we can bring him on shortly. But what else do I want to talk about? Yeah, we could talk about the Argentine peso, how that's rallying. But, yeah, how about palladium? We talked about palladium. We saw it down over 6% today. And this is just the wildest price swing since late 2015. Now, you have to remember that the commodity is used mostly in autocatalyst, has been a profitable trade as we've seen supply shortages that boosted prices of near-term contracts. So this gave investors the incentive to sell futures closer to delivery and buy those that are further along the curve as producers struggle to meet demand from the car makers. Now, this incentive is disappearing as supply concerns ease. So, we saw palladium futures for delivery in June are now trading at a 5-10 discount to September futures, meaning it's no longer profitable to roll the contract. Now, that's the first time the spread between the most active contract and the one expiring 3 months later turned negative since April of 2017. So the cost to borrow the metal has tumbled this year. Again, as I mentioned, we did see spot gold was down about 0.5%, as were U.S. gold futures. And you've got a lot of people taking profits after a three-day run-up. But, I don't know why anybody would take profits on a three-day run-up, considering you might in the paper world if you're looking at the Spider Gold Trust, which is the world's largest gold-backed exchange-traded fund. That fell to its lowest level since October 19th on Friday. Holdings have fallen over 3% since the beginning of the month. So we did have a nice rise on Friday in gold since April 16th at 1289, but of course, as of today, it couldn't hold that number. So we'll see what happens tomorrow. And again, I think these are, you know, I'd like to see it bump back up over 1300 and stay there again. So, but, you know, we are keeping these higher numbers. And, well, it's good to see action, ladies and gentlemen. It's the Bronx.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.